The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
The family of a 25-year-old woman who died by suicide have settled a High Court action brought against the HSE over her death. Maxine Maguire from Newbridge in County Kildare died in February of 2017, and her mother Cathy is here with me in the studio. Hello, Cathy.
Good morning, Claire.
It's lovely to have you here. I'm sorry it's under such circumstances and that we're talking about your lovely daughter, Maxine. Will you just tell us about her as a person?
Maxine was, she was a beautiful young lady. She had real beauty, not just on the outside, but she had real beauty from the inside. She was my best friend. And I, to this day, I'm still privileged to be able to say that she was my best friend. She had a heart of gold. She would do anything for anyone. She had a lovely group of friends, all the same age. And to this day, they're so supportive to me. They missed her dear friend very much. She just loved her family. Family was the most important thing to Maxine. She loved travelling. I'm so lucky that she did get to travel a lot. She got to see a lot of the world in her small 25 years. She was very proud of herself for getting her degree in university.
Yeah, you have the lovely graduation picture in with you today, where you can see how proud she is holding up her piece of paper. And I'm sure that was a lovely day for all of you, was it?
It was momentous. My sister and myself and my husband and her nanny. She had to get a special ticket for her nanny to attend because she was in a wheelchair. And we just couldn't believe, because she had previously struggled with her mental health. So she, this was after a stint in hospital and everything. Mm-hmm. So
what did she study?
Theology and sociology. And then she was doing her master's in childhood and family studies. She wanted to be a social worker to help people.
Mm-hmm. Well, we go back then and talk about when the problems first started, or when you noticed that all was not well. What happened, and when was that?
Yeah, she was 20. She had taken a year out of college, like a lot of people did at the time, and she'd gone to Australia with a group of friends.
Was she good in her teenage years and going through secondary school?
Yeah, like she's a little bit stroppy as a teenager, but...
Well, who isn't now?
Yeah, it was kind of like normal, but... Yeah, like she'd get really, really anxious coming up to exams, and she might even physically get sick. But I thought they were all like that. Do you know, I'm looking back now and I see little things that maybe were a little bit more serious. But there was nothing really out of the ordinary.
Yeah, nothing that you would say wasn't normal for a teenager, you know, under exam pressure. So then you mentioned that she went off to Australia. And when she came back then, what happened?
Yeah, she came back from Australia, and nearly from the get-go, like, there was little things I noticed. She wasn't meeting up with the friends as much. Do you know, I thought after being away for a year, she'd be meeting the friends and not really leaving the house much. She loved getting dressed up and putting on the bit of makeup and heading out. That wasn't happening. She was going around in her dressing gown. Then she was home for about 3 months and she wasn't sleeping. And then it just came to a head. She just wasn't sleeping. And I didn't really look, like, at the time, I didn't really understand it a lot. I used to think, if you're tired enough, you'd sleep. Do you know, that was me. Do you know what? Because I was exhausted.
You must have gotten to the point, though, where you thought, no, we need to do something here.
Yeah, yeah. We got to a point where we had an appointment on the Monday to see a therapist. And that Monday morning, I was ready for work, and it was, I'll never forget, it was very heavy rain. We live on the Liffey. We live quite close to the river. And I thought she was in bed, and she came in the door, like, drowned it from head to toe, a little pair of shorts and a little T-shirt. And she I didn't realise, but she had been in the Liffey. And then she got into the bath. And I thought that was a good idea. I said, yeah, warm yourself up. I didn't know she was in the Liffey. I just thought she was... I don't know what I thought, to be honest. But my husband had to break down the bathroom door. And, so we ended up bringing her to the therapist, and she said, you need to bring her to A&E Hospital. So we got a letter from the doctor and over we went, and she was admitted that evening.
Was that December of 2016 when that happened?
No, that was in 2012.
Oh, that was way back then.
Yeah,
before.
Way back.
So how long did she spend in hospital then?
6 weeks.
And then what happened? Obviously discharged then, and was she...
Discharged. We saw she had to go to a day hospital for a week or 2 weeks. And then they got her a little course to do. So she used to do that. And then, like, so she was seeing a psychiatrist on a regular basis, weekly, then fortnightly, then 6 weeks. Do you know, it transpired. She went back to college the following year. And so, like, for 4 years she was in the system. She was seeing a psychiatrist regularly. Like, he'd come out and he was so nice. He was so good to her. He might see a full room of patients, but he'd know Maxine was going on to college. And he said, come on in, Maxine. She was a tiny little thing. She's only 4'10". So he'd know she was getting the bus to college, like.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was signed off in February 2016, but they said they'd keep her name on file.
So they decided at that stage after 4 years that she was well enough to be signed out of the system.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you think she was then?
Well, like, she was doing quite well. You'd always hope for the best, but I liked that part what they said, we'll keep you on file for 18 months. So I thought, well, like, if anything happens in the 18 months, she can get back in. Do you know, I didn't worry as much. You know, she was off all the meds. I think that was a mistake. I think she needed some little thing.
Mm. How worried had you been over the 4 years?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, you're just living on your nerves. You don't know what's going to, every time you put the key in the door, what's going to face you when you're coming home. You just hope for the best, but you're on edge the whole time. I think I was on fight or flight mode. Do you know?
But then she got to the point where it was decided that she was okay to be signed off the system. As you say, the file kept there and so on. What happened then? How was she after that?
She was good. She was good. I'll say she was good. Like, she started her master's in the September. She even had tickets for, is it Electric Picnic or one of them? And she even sold them. The girls couldn't believe she wasn't going. She was like, no, I'm starting college now, back into doing master's. And she was all ready for it. And then, like, she had the graduation was the 12th of November 2016. And the week after that was when she started reaching out for help. And with mental illness, a week can be a very long time. You can slip so far in a week. Do you know?
Could you see it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I kept saying, no, sure, like, they'll have her in. You know, her name is on file. It should be no big deal. You know, they'll get her in. But she even made the phone call herself. And then myself and my husband, a week later, we started to panic. My husband was ringing them on a daily basis and they were like, we need a referral letter. And she'd gotten a referral letter, but they were saying it's not strong enough. Like, all they should have known, all they should have heard is her name and get her back in.
So now what I'm seeing is the link between the services and Maxine was broken, really.
Yeah.
And you had been told that it wouldn't be broken.
Absolutely.
So when she tried to get back in, the door was closed.
It was closed. It was absolutely closed. And we felt so lost, like, we just felt so helpless. But then my husband, it was the 2nd of December, he had to ring the doctors and give them a blow-by-blow of what the letter needed to say. So he had the stronger referral that they were talking about.
Yes.
And he was on his way over and he got there and she said, we've no one here. It was early, it was about 12 o'clock on a Friday. We've no psychiatrist here, Robbie. You may bring her to A&E. Over to A&E he went. So A&E and Nace, Lakeview, the mental health hospital, is connected. They're not separated, they're connected. And they were notified that Maxine was on her way over early in the day. But yet it was 1:30 in the morning by the time a psychiatrist came to see her. She stood most of the day outside in the rain because she wouldn't go inside.
Mm-hmm.
My husband's sister travelled with him. I was in work. And she sat inside to make sure she kept Maxine's place. So she saw the psychiatrist at 1:30 in the morning. And the psychiatrist spoke to us as well. And it was about 3:30 in the morning when we were sent home with a few sleeping tablets. She had no file in front of her, even though Maxine was in that hospital 4 years previous for 6 weeks. It's a long time to spend in a hospital and then have no information in front of you about you.
So like I said, the link was gone.
Oh my God, it was gone.
So what happened then after she was sent home?
We went home. As I said, it was 3:30 in the morning. She took a tablet, went to bed. I was up early the next morning. I had to give my younger son a lift. He was an elf in Palmerstown House. So I think that was 7 o'clock in the morning. I was coming back about 7:30. She was sitting at the front door. We had seats at the front door. She was having a cigarette. And I said, "The tablet not working?" She goes, "I just have to take the second tablet." So I got into bed with her. And I got up at about 12 o'clock and she was asleep and I left her asleep. So it was the next morning. My husband brought my son
to his job.
And I noticed it, both myself and Maxine, we have an underactive thyroid, so we take Eltroxin, and I had two little pill boxes. But they're on the windowsill in the kitchen, and I noticed both of them were open and all the tablets were gone. And I thought it a bit strange. And to be honest, I wouldn't have went into the room only for that. And I went into her room and I said, "Did you take the Eltroxin? Like, do you know, why would you have done that?" And she said, "No, I didn't take them." And then I called her. I said, "I'm after doing boiled eggs," and we were all sitting at the kitchen table and she looked a bit very pale. And then after that, then she had broken a mirror and she'd cut herself. And my husband questioned her. I think he thought she'd taken tablets as well. So
you knew that you were in deep trouble here and that, you know, she was making an attempt to take her own life or to die by suicide. And I have to be careful about talking about methodologies, and I know you'll understand that because, you know, we don't want people copying this. So, and look, if anyone is listening to this and they're affected by it, please contact the Samaritan's Helpline on 116123. So what happened after that? Because Maxine made a very serious attempt, didn't she, to end her life by suicide?
Yeah, we didn't know until later on that day that it was a paracetamol overdose she'd taken. So we had called the ambulance and over to A&E again. Shortly after that then her organ started to fail. And we were told that she'd need a liver transplant. So, thinking back of that, like, it was just such a hard time waiting to see if she'd get a liver. You know, she was incubated. She was in a dark room. She had all these machines hooked up to all different machines ready for surgery. And you couldn't speak or you couldn't talk in the room. You couldn't make a sound. I remember going into the room and I brought a big lump of tissue with me just in case, because I thought when I seen her, I'd just burst out crying, you know. But she was so lucky, like, she got the liver, and the transplant team were absolutely amazing. Oh my God, they were just the most amazing people. But they had great faith in the psychiatry end as well. They told us from her head to her toe she would get the best treatment. Do you know? So we were so hopeful.
Did she come home then after the transplant?
Yeah. It was coming up to Christmas. And they said she could come home for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And we'd bring her back up Stephen's morning. But I thought we'd bring her back up Stephen's morning and she'd stay in hospital. But they were allowing her home every evening. But when we were talking to the medical staff in the beginning, they were saying, "No, she'll hopefully get the liver and then she'll recover and then she'll be in the psychiatric end of the hospital." That's what we thought. That's what we envisioned happened. But It didn't. So we were up and down, up and down. I think it was because it was the Christmas period. And then on the 29th of December, they said they were discharging her.
On the medical side or on the psychiatric
side? On every side.
Completely discharged?
Completely. It's just... they were the experts. Even though what she was saying on the day of discharge was completely off the rocker, and they were still discharging her. And 2 years later, when I got all the medical files, I realised that a phone call had happened that day from the mental health services in Kildare to Vincent's Hospital. When they got the discharge, they made a phone call and said they'd prefer to be an inpatient. And they were told no. She was deemed well enough to be discharged.
So she came home then, and you probably knew, did you, that she wasn't well enough to be at home?
We were just so afraid. Every night that she'd... my husband slept at the end of her bed. At the end of her bed, do you know what I mean? That's how worried we were. We were so afraid. And then, so less than 40 hours after discharge, my husband had hung his keys on her door so that we'd hear her movement, you know. So
then she made another attempt, and shortly afterwards died in the Burns unit.
Yeah, 39 days later she died.
So that you talk about looking at the files 2 years later. Did it take the 2 years, Cathy, before you were able to do that?
No, I had only got them. It took 2 years to get them.
Mm-hmm. Papa, ich finde, ich brauche echt ein neues Handy.
Nimm doch meins. Ist doch mega.
Ja, mega alt.
Endlich ein Traumhandy statt Papas altem. Hol dir jetzt zum Beispiel das Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra zum Toppreis. Mit dem Jugendplus-Bonus für alle bis 27. Details auf 3.at/Jugend. Freiheit hoch 3.
You know, and there's another thing, we felt so strongly about the delays in referral and the A&E system that we went to our local representative when Maxine was in hospital just after having her liver transplant. So we spoke to Fiona Loughlin and we told her what had happened. But Maxine was still alive. But I felt the A&E system isn't fit for purpose. You shouldn't be bringing somebody in mental health stress there. It's not the right environment. There's hustle and bustle. There's ambulance arriving left, right and centre. There's Gardaí arriving with people in handcuffs. And
that's one side of it. But the other side of it, which I think is so striking, is that she was in the service.
Yeah.
And you were told she was still in the service.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get her the help
back in
that she needed. That's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what you were fighting for, so that nobody else would. I mean, God, all you want is your daughter back.
Yeah, but that can't happen.
That can't happen. So what you're saying now is that you don't want anyone else to go through the system the way it is now.
Absolutely. But Maxine's isn't an isolated case. There's so many out there that has been failed. There's so many people waiting on appointments and they've died. Like the saying, it's okay not to be okay. Reach out for help, reach out where. If she was trying to reaccess the services, what hope has someone trying to get to them for the first time? And that's why the recommendations are so important, because it's one of them is easier reaccess to mental health services. It's crucial. I wouldn't wish this, what we've gone through, my family, on anybody. And she had her whole life ahead of her. She deserved the best of health treatment in this country, and she was failed. Do you know, when someone comes to the A&E with having a heart attack, they're not told, you sit down there now for 13 hours and hopefully you won't die. No, they're rushed to surgery. And people with mental illness are in mental distress. They need to be treated similar. They're having a brain attack. in, you know, who's the best person to see this person straight away, not 13 hours. I think they just hope that someone will get tired of waiting after 3 or 4 hours and just head home and won't wait around.
Mm-hmm. And the recommendations that you got, does that make you feel vindicated in a way?
Like, well, not really, because they were made in 2019. They're still not implemented. I will feel vindicated if they ever get implemented, and that I know for a fact that they will save lives. That's the only way I'll find a bit of peace, because I feel that Maxine did want to help people and she hoped to be a social worker. So this is the only way she can now help people. What's the point? Like, I requested a jury at her inquest so that recommendations could be made.
Yes.
I waited longer period of time for an inquest for that reason. So I hope that these will get made someday.
And the apology that you got, Cathy, from the HSE, and I'll just read it. The HSE apologise unreservedly and sincerely for the deficits in Maxine's care. What did that mean to you?
Well, it was important to me that they were holding their hands up. Sometimes I think when someone dies by suicide, there's a lot of stigma involved. And sometimes you think, you know, are people looking at you saying, what's wrong with that family, do you know? So,
Does that apology help with that feeling?
It does. It does. It helps a lot.
They go on to say that the deficits in her care culminated in her subsequent untimely and tragic death. And they apologise for the continuing profound sadness and suffering this has caused you and her family. This is for you. What is that like now? Like, how is the family? How are you now?
We're just devastated. We're like the walking dead. That's the only way I can describe it. It's like when something like this happens, it's like a grenade going off and a shrapnel. Everyone is hit. There's no one saved. No one got away lightly. Myself and my husband, we come from big enough families, and it has hit everybody. 9.5 years have passed, but myself and my husband, we're still like, because of this fight, it was like the wound was never closed. You know, I think we might have got further on in our grief had we not taken this case, but I felt the case was important to hold them accountable. So it's catch-22, really. But I don't think we'll ever be right. The vision of my two sons carrying her coffin along with their cousins will never leave me. The fact that we had a closed coffin, that I didn't even get the chance to pick out a nice dress or do her hair, do her makeup. I go to funerals now and I'm jealous. When I see the person in the coffin, I'm jealous. I'm jealous of the way they look. My aunt passed away and, oh my God, she was like the nicest person ever. Her hair and makeup was done to perfection. I didn't even get that final thing to do for my daughter. Do you know, and that haunts me and will haunt me for the rest of my life.
Is the fight over for you now?
I'm so tired. Yeah. I really am. There's not much left in me. I'm here today just to speak about the recommendations again. And like, I'm just hoping that someday they're signed into legislation. I just hope so. Like, I've met Michael D. Higgins. I've been to his garden party. I sent so many different emails to whoever would listen about this story and about the recommendations. And that's what, at the end of the day, it's all about, is just the recommendations. You know, she's not coming back to me.
I know. And, you know, my heart breaks for you because I appreciate what you've done. But I know, sitting looking at you here, that's all you want. That's all anybody wants. And that's, you can't have it. You know, and it's devastating, isn't it?
Yeah. 100%. I'll never be mother of the bride. I'll never hold any children. My husband will never walk her down the aisle. It's just, you know, she was in the middle of the two boys and they loved her so much. They're just devastated. One was 20, one was 27 at the time. And they're just, they have longer to live than me. And they have to live without her all these years and what that entails.
And have you been given any assurances that those recommendations will be acted on?
No.
So as it stands, it's a choice. Like, it's not something that has to happen.
It's not something that has to happen. No, I don't know if any of them are listening. Do you know? I don't know.
Well, Kathy, I really appreciate you talking to us, and I just hope that it has an impact on whether those recommendations are enacted, but also that it helps somebody who's listening to this, you know, who may, as you say, it's hard when you reach out and there is nobody there, but we know that, and I mentioned the Samaritans, they are there in the first instance to help people. And I want people to know that if you make that call, it will be answered, you know.
Oh, 100%.
116, 123. And I'm so grateful to you for coming in, and I wish you well.
Thank you so much, Claire.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Kathy McGuire.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.